Well, as you just heard from Michael Brissenden, some of the signals in the economy are quite positive. Petrol prices are down. Interest rates are probably heading down again. You think things might start to pick up. We might start spending. Stephen Mayne is the founder of crikey.com.au, a shareholder activist. He watches the markets and business on all of our behalf. Good morning, Stephen.
Morning, Deborah.
The Reserve Bank is probably going to cut rates, perhaps up to 1% today. Do you think that that is indeed what will happen?
Well, I now actually think it might even be 1.25% down to 4% because we've just had another shocking night overnight on the markets. The Dow Jones down 700, the S&P 500 down almost 9%. That's giving up most of last week's gains. And the Chinese manufacturing figures were just terrible, you know, forward orders and all these sort of things. So I think it's very gloomy on global recession. And the fact of the matter is we still do have close to the highest interest rates in the developed world at 5.25%. You know, the Americans are at 1%. The Japanese are at 0.3%. So I think there's an argument for a bit of shock therapy and a 1.25 percentage point cut down to 4%. If you consider that the Brits did 1.5% cut in one go, I think down to 3% in their last attempt, I think the argument is there. So who knows? We might see a record rate cut this afternoon.
Well, Stephen, is there any link, I suppose, between this kind of declining interest rate and freeing up access to funds to businesses by banks? Are banks still, you know, reluctant to lend, as it were?
Well, globally, there's a credit squeeze. So our banks all over the world are suffering from this massive asset deflation. We've seen asset prices fall by 50%. This has wiped out the capital of most banks or many banks around the world. So they just don't have the capital to lend. Obviously, our banks do have more capital to lend. But we've seen a big problem in Australia with foreign banks trying to get their money out. So the biggest challenge we've faced is the fact that we do have this enormous $600 billion foreign debt. And there's an awful lot of corporates out there who have massive loans to foreign banks. I mean, at the moment, it's a German bank, which has frozen $100 million of money that Babcock & Brown owns. And Babcock & Brown is suspended and they're in discussions with their banks. And there's all sorts of situations, I think, primarily related to foreign banks trying to get out. In terms of the actual flow of credit, we've actually seen things loosen up a bit over the last few days. And the premium that that banks have to pay over the official interest rates for 3 month money, for 90-day money, it blew out to 1.44% in October, which was very high, and it's come back now down to 0.57% over official rates. So according to the markets, and that those figures are the key indicator of liquidity, according to the markets, it has freed up a little bit. And I think the bigger issue is actually just the economy, that confidence is shot. The economy's gone over the cliff. The world economy is clearly in recession. I have no doubt now that Australia is going to have a recession. We might see negative figures tomorrow in the national accounts. I would have thought in spite of the $10 billion, we're almost certainly going to see negative figures in for the December quarter as well.
When you look at the performance on Wall Street and the way that that plays into overall confidence, when you bring that back down to, you know, the small business or the medium-sized business that we are all familiar with, surely those businesses can manage their smaller customer base. They're not so influenced by what's going on in Wall Street, are they?
Well, you would think that, but I see it in my business, and everyone I talk to is basically that because stock markets have fallen by 50% around the world, and because asset prices of all description are in free fall, including housing prices around the world, commodity prices, oil prices, everyone has just seen so much of their wealth wiped out, and they're so fearful about what this destruction of wealth means to them that they've stopped spending. So it really is just the case, if everyone stops spending, I mean, there's a whole bunch of mining projects and more than $100 billion worth of mining projects which have been cancelled because the commodity prices have crashed. That feeds through into jobs, that feeds through into consumer confidence. And the bottom line with Australia is that we have the second most indebted household sector in the world in percentage terms, you know, behind the Brits. We've got $1 trillion of household debt. We're highly debt-dependent economy, highly reliant on foreign capital. And therefore, we don't have a lot of capacity to keep spending because we've got this huge burden. So the best thing that our regulators can do, and I think they are doing it, is to cut official interest rates to save tens of billions of dollars on interest rates. And if they do cut by 1.25% today, think about it. That is a $12 billion cut in interest payments for the household sector, which is burdened with this $1 trillion of household debt. So as long as the banks pass it on in full, that is the best way to get relief to the over-indebted Australian household.
Now, of course, there was another very interesting and big casualty of the change in the world economic climate. That was BHP and Rio, that BHP built an attempt at taking over Rio, just kind of fell apart.
Well, it did. I think it was the starkest reminder yet that anyone, any government, any institution, any company, any individual who is carrying too much debt in this environment is vulnerable. And Rio Tinto, it's got $65 billion of debt. It borrowed US$38 billion in 2007 to buy the Canadian business Alcan. And BHP wanted to buy Rio Tinto, which is a traditional rival, but increasingly that debt was basically a poison chalice. And the last thing you'd want to do if you're BHP is to take on Rio Tinto's $65 billion of debt. And the market movements since BHP walked away have actually seen a relative change in value of more than $40 billion. So the Rio Tinto share price has crashed, the BHP share price has risen, and it's all about debt. So you have to look around and just ask yourself, if you've got too much debt, you are in trouble. I mean, just look at the great Transfield business, you know, wonderful business. The Belgiorno Netters family on the BLW rich list as billionaires back in May. Its share price has just crashed. Its chairman has been margin called. It's just had to do an emergency capital raising to try and save itself. And that is what is happening is magnificent business names and brands suddenly hitting enormous distress because they carry too much debt. And even the great Rio Tinto is now, I think, under severe pressure.
You have to look at the way that these giants of the industrial world, I mean the actual executives running them, came to the management plans that they arrived at and then thought they were such geniuses that they paid themselves millions of dollars. BHP is up for huge costs now associated with this bid. Is anybody asking any questions about what these executives ever thought they were up to?
Well, as far as I went to the BHP Billiton AGM last Thursday, I actually ran for the board on a Don't Take Rio Over platform and time for a new chairman. And look, it was interesting. There weren't any questions throughout the meeting about the estimated $7 billion of takeover costs that would have been incurred if the bid had gone through, nor on the sort of $1 billion of costs that Rio and BHP have together incurred on this failed takeover. So I think that never before have we seen such vast transaction costs being proposed. And it was going to be the last great free lunch for the investment banking and legal communities who were advising on the deals. And I think there will be a bit of a day of reckoning about the sheer takeover costs that are involved in these big mergers. I mean, there's another mining merger that happened last year, which was Oxiana and Zinifex. They were both $6 billion companies. They put themselves together to form a $12 billion company. They paid all their advisors $100 million to do that deal. They paid their CEO an $8.4 million payout to go away. And now the shares are suspended for a month. They're in emergency negotiations with their banks, and there's a question mark over whether it will survive, and the $12 billion of value has disappeared. The investment bankers who advised on the deal still got the $100 million in costs. The CEO who retired with all these thank yous still walked out with his $8.4 million payout. And us shareholders are sitting here saying, wow, the stock's suspended for a month. It's in negotiation with its banks. A lot of angry people out there about these sort of payouts to both advisors and to executives.
Well, are there any? I understand, of course, there's been a lot of discussion about the golden parachute problem of executive pay. Now, new laws around that are apparently gathering momentum. Do you have a sense that this will actually come to pass?
Well, look, there's certainly an appetite for it in the community. There's a lot of outrage about payouts. There was a study from the proxy advisory firm Risk Metrics that was released last week saying that the average payout for departing CEOs of ASX 100 companies was $3.4 million. over the last 12 months. And we've seen some big protest votes against remuneration reports at the AGM season, which finished on Friday. The likes of Wesfarmers, and Qantas, Toll, Suncorp, Boral all faced protest votes of over 40%. So there is a lot of anger. The shareholders are voting. And frankly, I have to say, I'm amazed that after a year of being in government, that the Rudd government has actually done nothing so far on executive pay. For all the PR and all the public ruminations about executive pay is out of control, they actually haven't done anything yet. Lenore Taylor had a really interesting column in the Weekend Australian pointing this out, that it's been a lot of rhetoric and no action. And Risk Metrics last week came up with a very simple change to the law, which says any executive who wants to depart with more than $1 million requires shareholder approval for that payout. And it's a very simple change to the law, and yet we still haven't seen it. And I don't know, I can't work out why they're so slow to act. And I guess one small irony in this situation is that the current chairman of ASIC, Tony D'Aloisio, himself got a $7.8 million payout when he was terminated from his position as the chief executive of ASX. And that didn't go to a shareholder vote. And I mean, you know, we need a law that says that sort of a payout has to be approved by shareholders. And it's a tricky situation for the current corporate regulator, the current chairman of ASIC, to himself have been in receipt of such a huge payout which didn't go to the shareholders, and a government which still to this day, after a year, has not moved on this issue of giving shareholders the right to vote down massive golden goodbyes to executives.
Well, it is interesting, though, to see the cudgels being taken up by shareholders who are prepared to lodge protest votes. I read an interesting table of the votes in the Qantas AGM, for example. There were big protest numbers there, but it's not the only one.
Well, Qantas certainly, its AGM was last Friday on the last day of the AGM season. And I think that was very significant from two points of view. The remuneration report was almost voted down. It was a more than 40% protest vote. And that was basically saying that Jeff Dixon, the CEO, who in the annual report was stated to have received $12 million for 07-08, is the highest paid CEO in the world. And this was just over the odds. And yes, there were retention payments after the private equity bid fell through, and okay, he's done a reasonable job over a long period, but it's just excessive. He shouldn't be the highest paid CEO in the world. So that was a significant protest vote. But I think even more important, the Qantas got themselves a new director in the last 6 or 9 months, Barbara Ward, who had a long period, was a former top advisor to Paul Keating, formerly ran a big airline leasing business. But she was also a director of Orco Finance Group, and she was one of the independent directors who approved some of these transactions, which proved to be a disaster. And so Risk Metrics recommended a vote against Barbara Ward at the Qantas AGM on Friday. And you have to remember that normally directors get an average vote of 96% in favour. It's a real club. Shareholders normally don't vote against directors. And she got a 42% against vote because of her record, primarily at Orco Finance Group, but also as the chairman of the Multiplex Audit Committee when Multiplex lost more than $500 million on building the new Wembley Stadium in the UK. So that was a big protest vote. So I think we are going to see a bit of a revolution on that front with the directors getting voted out. And it's not before time. I mean, frankly, it is also ridiculous that the chairman of ABC Learning, a guy called David Ryan, was re-elected to the chair of Transurban, our biggest toll road company, with 66% in favour, and was re-elected to the board of Lendlease, one of our biggest property developers, with 71% in favour, after ABC Learning got into their massive disaster. So the shareholders still can't vote out directors like that. So we've got a long way to go, but we are making progress, as was seen with that big protest vote against Barbara Ward on Friday at Qantas.
Now, there was, of course, no protest vote at all at Manningham Council.
Well, yes, Deborah, I have to say after 37 consecutive election defeats that I've had over the years, running for 31 public company boards, I've had more than $200 billion worth of stock voted against me as a shareholder activist, and I ran for my local council in Melbourne at the elections and got elected. So I was sworn in last night as a councillor at Manningham, and all of a sudden I'm inside the tent with some responsibility rather than being outside the tent as a professional sort of governance advocate and critic. So, yes, it's going to be a whole new world with some responsibility, and I'm looking forward to serving the 106,000 residents of the city of Manningham in Melbourne's eastern suburbs.
Thanks very much, Stephen.
Thanks, Deborah.
Alderman Stephen Mayne there, the founder of crikey.com.au and a shareholder activist. Time now for the news headlines with John Logan.